Glad to see all who are here tonight. I appreciate the effort of all in coming and trust there will be blessing for each individual. Now, our readings tonight are again from, if you remember the meetings for the two remaining nights, it would be good if you can come as well. You'd be very welcome. Now, our readings are from the first book of Kings again and starting in chapter 5. The first book of Kings and chapter 5. And we read at verse number 1. 1 Kings chapter 5 and verse 1. And Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants unto Solomon, for he had heard that they had anointed him king in the room of his father, for Hiram was ever a lover of David. Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, Thou knowest how that David my father could not build a house unto the name of the Lord his God for the wars which were about him on every side until the Lord put them under the soles of his feet. But now the Lord my God hath given me rest on every side, so that there is neither adversary nor evil occurrent. And behold, I purpose to build an house unto the name of the Lord my God. Now, verse 7 tells us that Hiram, when he heard that, rejoiced greatly. Chapter 6 and verse 1, It came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month Ziph, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. And the house which King Solomon built for the Lord, the length thereof was 80 cubits, and the breadth thereof 20 cubits, and the height thereof 30 cubits. Now, that's all very interesting reading. Verse 29 tells us he carved all the walls of the house round about with carved figures of cherubims and palm trees and open flowers within and without, and the floor of the house he overlaid with gold within and without. Verse 37, In the fourth year was the foundation of the house of the Lord laid, in the month Ziph, in the 11th year, in the month Bul, which is the 8th month, was the house finished throughout all the parts thereof, and according to all the fashion thereof. So he was 7 years in building it, but Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished all his house. He built also the house of the forest of Lebanon. The length thereof was 100 cubits, and the breadth thereof 50 cubits, and the height thereof 30 cubits, upon 4 rows of cedar pillars, with cedar beams upon the pillars, and it was covered with cedar above upon the beams, that lay on 45 pillars, 15 in a row. And there were windows in 3 rows, and light was against light in 3 ranks, and all the doors and posts were square with the windows, and the light was against light in 3 ranks. And he made a porch of pillars, the length thereof was 50 cubits, and the breadth thereof 30 cubits. Verse 7, Then he made a porch for the throne, where he might judge, even the porch of judgment, and it was covered with cedar from one side of the floor to the other. And his house where he dwelt had another court within the porch, which was of like work. Solomon made also an house for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken to wife, like unto this porch. All these were of costly stones, according to the measures of huge stones, sawed with saws within and without, even from the foundation unto the coping. Now then we have more material about the temple. Verse 15, 2 pillars of brass. Verse 23, a molten sea of brass. Verse 27, 10 bases of brass. Verse 38, 10 lavers of brass. And so on. Now chapter 8, we'll not read much more. Chapter 8 and verse 10. And it came to pass when the priests were come out of the holy place that the cloud filled the house of the Lord, so that the priests could not stand to minister because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord had filled the house of the Lord. And then we have Solomon's great prayer. And just the last verse from chapter 9. Chapter 9 and verse 1. And it came to pass, when Solomon had finished the building of the house of the Lord and the king's house, and all Solomon's desire which he was pleased to do, that the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time, as he had appeared unto him at Gibeon. Now, that's an abbreviated reading if ever there was one, but unfortunately we cannot just take all our time in reading. you can do that just privately, according as occasion allows. Now, most will know that we are making our way through these studies on the reign of Solomon, and tonight will bring us to the central portion in our considerations. We have already thought about Solomon's accession to the throne and the various circumstances that were connected with that, and how the Lord, in a very providential and marvelous way, brought this man to the throne of Israel. Last night we thought about Solomon's administration, a great kingdom, very broad in its extent, and yet wisely administered by different divisions and delegations and distributions and so on. In the two nights that still remain, as we have already mentioned on previous occasions, we will think about Solomon's affairs, the home affairs and foreign affairs in his great empire, and finish up on Friday night by thinking of his apostasy and the various adversaries that raised their head during, or at least at the end of his reign. And as we have already announced, the subject to be considered in the meeting tonight is a very extensive one. We'll have to squash a good bit of it into short space. The meeting will be an exercise in compression. We will take a look tonight at some of the different aspects of Solomon's architecture. He was a great builder. His buildings broadly broke into two parts, and we'll be looking just at one part tonight. We will have to make some remarks about other sections of it tomorrow night in the will of the Lord. There was first of all the great scheme of buildings that he undertook in Jerusalem, in the capital itself. And then there were quite a number of building schemes that he took on in other parts of the land and other parts of the empire. We will be looking at them eventually. But tonight, it's that first section that I want to consider in the meeting, the building schemes that Solomon undertook in connection with the city of Jerusalem. He lifted that city from being a place of very little significance, and he put it upon the map as one of the most glorious centers that the world has ever seen. And he enriched it, and it became, for him, the capital of a very splendid and fabulous empire. Now, when he came to Jerusalem, it was quite a small place. His father had conquered it, we know from earlier writings. And when he conquered it, it was called the City of David. And of course the city of David, as it was then known, was by no means sufficient to contain all that Solomon wanted in it. So one of the first things that he did was he extended the territory, and he took into the confines of the city of Jerusalem a good bit of ground that hadn't previously been considered part of the city proper. There were seven building schemes. I don't know, we'll get a mention at some of them because we can clump them together. Seven building schemes that he undertook in the immediate environs of the city that were very important. They're all recorded for us from these chapters that we've been reading from tonight. The first one, the most famous one, the most important one, the best known one, of course, was the building of the temple itself. Then, secondly, we've read in chapter 7 that he built a structure called the Forest of the House of Lebanon. We'll discover what that refers to just in a minute or two. Then verse 6 of chapter 7, it tells us that he made a porch of pillars. That's the third building. In verse 7, he made a porch for the throne, where he might judge, the porch of judgment. That's the fourth building. Verse 8, he made a house for himself. The same verse, he made a house for Pharaoh's daughter. That brings you to six buildings. And the seventh building is that he put a new wall right round the city of Jerusalem. So those were seven very important and expensive building schemes. Now you can take a look at them and you can see that they fall roughly into three different categories. There was first of all the great building that was spiritual in its significance. That was the temple. We'll talk about that just in a minute. Then, as well as the spiritual building, there were those state buildings. The house of the forest of Lebanon was probably in Solomon's day what we would call the headquarters of the Ministry of Defense. There is another verse later on in the book tells us that Solomon made 300 shields of gold and he put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. I think it became a kind of an armory, the headquarters of the Ministry of Defense. Beside that house of the forest of Lebanon, we'll talk about why it was called that later on. Beside that house, there was a porch of just an open porch with a great number of pillars in it. And that open porch joined this house of the forest of Lebanon, and it joined it to the house of judgment. In that house of judgment, when you went into it up through the colonnade and up the steps, sitting away over at one side, there would have been the great king sitting on his ivory throne. And if you had any court case or any matter to be decided by judgment, that was the house to which you went, and you received the judgment of the wise king in the house of justice. That's what we would call in our day the royal courts of justice. So the Ministry of Defense, and possibly the Ministry of Finance, joined by a colonnade of beautiful pillars to the royal courts of justice. Those were the state buildings, the spiritual building, the temple, and these state buildings very close beside the temple. Then behind that again were the two buildings, we'll call them social buildings, rather private quarters. There was Solomon's own dwelling place, the royal quarter, the royal palace for the king himself, his private quarters. And just across the courtway, of course, was the palace for the princess of Egypt. Kensington Palace was just a little bit across the way. So you have spiritual building, state buildings, and social buildings, all very, very closely linked together. The erection of those buildings took Solomon 20 years. He spared no effort. He withheld no energy and he spared no expense because he wanted to make this great city the capital of a marvelous empire. Now, we'll have to see how they were linked together and maybe just cover some of these things later on. You may not understand what I've just said, but I hope at least you have some idea of what's involved. Now, I would say, I'll just repeat again, that in order to get those buildings, Solomon had to take in a new piece of territory. And of course, it's no use building beautiful buildings and erecting these wonderful edifices if they're not protected. So once he had made these beautiful things, he proceeded to make a wall right round Jerusalem so that the whole thing might be surrounded with a strong defence. I can just see, they're just shouting out at me as many spiritual lessons from all that that will keep me going to next Wednesday night, never mind to 9 o'clock. But we'll make our way through and just pick out a few lessons. When we come to the scriptural record, as we would expect, there's far more space given in the Bible to the record of the building of the temple than given to these other buildings. It obviously was the most important one, and it's the building to which God devotes most attention in the record of these chapters. It would give us the very simple lesson that what we do for him and the work that we do in connection with the spiritual sanctuary is much more important than what we do in connection with secular things, and that will receive the most attention in the divine record. Now, in building the temple, there were a couple of things that Solomon didn't have to worry about because they'd already been provided for him. Very important things, and I'll mention them briefly. First of all, he had no worry about the site, the proper site for the temple. Now, that would have been a big question had it not already been settled, but it had been settled by David, his father. You would well imagine, some of you people, when you're picking a site for a house, you hardly know where to choose. And you look at this site, and you look at that site, and you look at different views and so on, and you can imagine how difficult it would have been for Solomon just to make this decision.
did he not have some definite direction? Where am I going to pick to build a house for God? The place that he chose was a most unlikely place. Just north of the old part of Jerusalem, the part where David lived, there was a rugged kind of a hill. Not the kind of place that you would have selected for building a palace or anything like that, but that was the site for the temple. Now God had made it clear to David what that site would be. That used to be a little piece of heathen ground. But his father David had bought that from a man who was a Jebusite, a man who was a Canaanite. He paid the price for it. And when he had paid the price for it, he built an altar. And he offered sacrifices to the Lord. And the Lord told David, he said, David, you'll never build that temple. But he said, that's the site for it. It used to be heathen. But the price has been paid. The blood has been shed. And God said, that will make a good foundation for a dwelling place for me. It was very like that when the Apostle Paul went to Corinth. He visited a city where there was nothing but heathendom and idolatry. He preached the message of a Christ who died at Calvary. He put down a foundation of the precious blood and the atoning death of the Lord Jesus. And when he left that city where there had only previously been heathen temples, there was a temple reared to the honor of God, a dwelling place of the God of heaven. We take a very simple lesson from that tonight, a very basic truth, that the foundation of every assembly is the work of the Lord Jesus upon the cross. The Apostle Paul said, other foundation can no man lay. The basis of the assembly is not intelligence. The basis of the assembly is not a committee of wealthy men. Those are the kind of things that form the basis for committees and communities upon earth. But the basis of the people of God in their gatherings is the precious blood of Christ that was shed at Calvary. So David had no worry about the site. The site of the temple was chosen not because of its outlook, not because of its landscape, not because of its value. The site was chosen because it had been sanctified by the mark of sacrificial blood. We would never think of preaching anything else to see assemblies formed and planted and so on. The second thing that David had no worry about, that would have been a great matter of concern for him, he had no worry about the specification for the temple. Because once you would have picked the site, and there would have been dispute about that, the second question would be, what's this thing going to be like? Well, David had no problem. Or Solomon had no problem, because he had received from his father a handful of specifications. We are told in another part of the Bible that by the Holy Spirit, Solomon had been given a revelation of the plans for the temple, and he handed them down to his son. And when Solomon began to build the temple, it was not left to his imagination. He was building according to the written specification. Isn't it great for us to know that when it comes to the order of an assembly, we not only are absolutely sure about the foundation, we didn't have to lay the foundation, it was there long before we were even born. Neither are we left in the order of an assembly to guesswork. Again, the ordering of an assembly is not a matter of human intelligence, human innovation, or human imagination. We have just to go according to a specification that has been given to us hundreds of years ago. We have received it from an old generation. I emphasized it on Monday night. Solomon building the temple went according to a written copy of the plan. When the building had been erected according to specification, God was so delighted with it that he came to live in it. I know I'm speaking to people tonight, and you would love to have communities and assemblies where the presence of the Lord would be known in all its sweetness and sufficiency. You say, yes, we would love to have assemblies where the Lord's presence would be manifested. Well, the only way to secure that is to make sure they're ordered according to the written specification of the Word of God. So he had no trouble with those two things, because they were already there before he thought about it, and they've been there for us as well. There was another matter that he did have to think about. Some of it was already provided for, but he did have to think about part of this. It was supplies. It's one thing to have a site for a house. It's another thing to have the specification for the house, but you need to have building materials that you can erect it. So where is Solomon going to get these building materials? Now, his father David did provide a great lot. We read about that in Chronicles. That's not part of the Book of Kings. He provided a great deal of material for the temple. 1,000,000 talents of silver and 100,000 talents of gold. That's powerful. He didn't build it, but he did his best for it. And I tell you, because of David's labors and sacrifice, his son was given a head start in building for God. The father didn't give him all that he needed, but he gave him a great start. We'll have to lift our, well, we don't wear hats so much now, but whatever you call it, we'll have to lift our hats and salute men that have gone to a previous generation. I'm going to speak to my own generation now. And I'll say this, if we make a mess of assembly testimony, it's a shame. It's a shame on us. It's a shame. And if we grow up as people that have no knowledge of the Bible, we should bury our heads in spiritual embarrassment. Most of you young brethren in this meeting have far more books than your grandfather ever had. And you've even got the Bible and computer now, some of you. Some of us would hardly know how to key in the numbers. You've the Bible and computer, and you've everything. I tell you, with all the libraries, all the concordances, all the ministry meetings, all the sermons, all the helps, all that has been provided by men of a previous generation, I tell you, we should be spiritual giants. And I have a notion of some of those men were back in our day now, and we're standing beside them. They hadn't the advantages that we have. We were just standing beside them like spiritual pygmies instead of giants. David gave this man such a massive amount of wealth that if Solomon hadn't built the temple, it would have been a total shame. And we should build house for God and build it well, for we've been well enriched by the sacrifices of a previous generation. But he needed more stuff. He got great supplies, but he needed more. He had an exercise. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see just in this one of these chapters, I think it's chapter 5 here, how God overruled in a very marvelous way. He got a message from another king one day. And Solomon had an idea in his mind of building this house, but there were two things especially that he needed. He needed timber, and he needed men that were good at working in stone. Now, those men, he didn't have that in Israel. Israel wasn't a land that was covered with good timber. He could grow plenty of corn and wheat and barley and all that kind of thing. But if he's going to build this temple according to the specification, he's going to need plenty of timber. And he's going to need men that are skilled at stone. Now, he gets a message from a king. And this king congratulates him on coming to the throne. And Solomon says to himself, he says, do you know? He said, I can see the hand of the Lord in this. For he said, this very man that has congratulated me so and been so friendly on my coming to the throne, he says, he's the very man that reigns over Lebanon. And he says, there are plenty of trees up there. And Solomon sent him a message. He said, thanks very much for your congratulation. He says, actually, there's another little thing I would like to mention to you. He says, I want to build a house for the name of Jehovah. And he says, I need a lot of wood. And he says, I have had that purpose in my heart for a wee while. And he said, maybe you would send me down the wood and send me down the men to work on stone. And this king that had congratulated him, he said, man dear, he says, certainly, he said, it'll be a delight to do it. He says, whatever you need, he said, I'll just give it to you. Now I think that's a beautiful thing. There was first of all an exercise in Solomon's heart. And then God put a willingness into the heart of another man. Isn't that a great thing? the heart of Solomon and the hand of God. Solomon says, I have a purpose. You would have noticed that he didn't begin to build the temple until his fourth year. I read a book today and they criticized him on that. They thought he should have been started sooner. I think he had other problems to deal with first, some of those problems we talked about the other night. He had to deal with those problems in the first couple of years. And even apart from that, he was waiting upon God, and he had this purpose to build a house. And now the way becomes clear, and God confirms him in his exercise by opening up a door that I think he never expected. You know, we should watch for that even in building for the assembly to the present day. It's great to find people that are exercised, and we should be exercised, but then we can depend upon God to open up doors and to work in a providential way. And Solomon got all the skill and all the timber and the raw materials from this country that he needed. Now, I'm just mentioning that and slipping. He's got the site, he's got the specification, and he's got the supplies. Now, one thing that I do want to mention in connection with this temple is the skill involved in erecting it. You know, it wasn't Jerry built. And it wasn't any Tom, Dick and Harry could just muck in here and splash about. No, no. This wasn't a free-for-all. You know, I've seen bits of things. Sometimes even people have asked me to help them in building work, and it usually didn't turn out too well. Maybe a bit crooked in one thing or another. And some of us are very easily pleased. But Solomon said, he said, now listen, he said, this is a temple for God. And he said, things will have to be done right. He said, there can be no shabby workmanship here. And Solomon was very, very careful to get men that were skilled in their own field. Now, there were three areas especially. Not all together, this is not all told, but there were three areas especially where Solomon needed men that knew what they were doing. First of all, he needed men that were good at timber. And then he needed quarry men that were good at stone. And then he needed a man and helpers with him that were very good at casting metal. Men for the forest, men for the foundry, and men for the quarry. Now the quarry man wouldn't be able to work in the foundry, and the foundry man might not be any good in the forest. And Solomon managed to organize, I can't go into the details now, he managed to organize all these different skills. I spent a good bit of time in the meeting last night talking about it. One of our problems is, you know, we have far too many men doing the other man's job. And we are really plagued, brethren, I know you think I'm hard and critical, we are really plagued with misfits. You know, we don't believe in one man ministry because the Bible doesn't teach it. But we are greatly in the danger of falling into the trouble of any man ministry. Anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. According to the Bible, not anyone can do it. God has fitted men for certain functions, and if you push a man into what God hasn't fitted him for, according to the Bible, not anyone can do it. God has fitted men for certain functions, and if you push a man into what God hasn't fitted him for, he'll just end a clumsy misfit. And he'll be doing the job that somebody else should be doing, so they'll not be doing it. And when he's doing the job that somebody else is doing, not only will he keep the man back that should be doing it, but he'll not be doing the work right. So Solomon had men for these different areas. You could work around it and talk about evangelists. You know, quarry men, I wouldn't know much about quarry work, as you can imagine. A quarry man has skill, but he doesn't need to be that particular. I was in a quarry once, and the man told me, he says, try and break that stone out, and I'd give the thing a clap or two, and it never even made a mark on it. He said, wait, I'll show you. And he lifted the long thing, and he hit the rock at a particular angle, and there was a big blue barrel just as big as that desk there. You just thought he was cutting out a slice of butter. And he just taught me the lesson, I might be an office boy, but I'm not a quarry man. You see, there are men can preach the gospel like that, and some of us are clumsy, and we're cutting butter and all that kind of thing, and then you get a man to preach the gospel, and he can so use the tool of this book that he can just hit the conscience of the sinner. You say, I know, what about the Spirit of God? I know all that. It's the Spirit that gives the man the enablement to preach the gospel. And he can hit the conscience, and the boy's as hard as flint. And there are 100 men that couldn't reach him or touch him. The man that's equipped with the gift of evangelism by God, he hits him at the right point. And the boy that's as hard as flint just tumbles down. Just separated from, I better get back to this here, separated from the quarry of nature. Now, he's taking hit big things. But then a man that's going to work in the foundry, he needs to be very particular. You know, some of those carvings that he had to do, they had to be very small and very intricate work. You see, some of us were clumsy enough at it and were footed about enough. But we try to engage a little bit in Bible study, at least on maybe Wednesday evenings and Saturday mornings, and things like that. And we look at things, some of the fine things. Some people are interested in words. I have a sort of a notion about words and one thing or another. Another man tells me, he says, boys, that would just give me a sore head. I couldn't be bothered. But you see, you need men for every job. Then you need men that are good at cutting down the trees and good at shaping them. There was skill. All I'm saying is there was skill needed for the building of this house for God. And if I'm not mistaken, there's great skill needed even to the present day. One of the amazing things about this temple is that when it was built, it was smaller than we would expect. Many people have the idea of a great big building, a massive, great, big place. But the temple was not so. It was only maybe about 100 feet long. And maybe about 35 feet wide. It was quite tall, I'll admit. But it wasn't nearly as big as we would expect. And yet, into what was relatively a small building, there was compressed a great amount of precious wealth. It was worth far more than its size seemed to indicate. I can see that with an assembly, you know. You know, the most important thing about an assembly of the Lord's people is not its size. Something more important than size. You could have a great big building, 10 times the size of Solomon's temple, but it might just be a barn. But his building was quite small, but there was beauty. And there was wealth in it. I tell you, some of you Christians, I know where you come from tonight, I can see you. You're sitting down with a little company, there may be a dozen of you on a Lord's Day morning. It's not a very big thing in the eyes of earth. Most of the assemblies, relatively speaking, you compare them with the great gatherings. Great gatherings for sport. You take any of the sport things on Sunday, there'll be hundreds of them. You'll not have hundreds here. You take a gathering for politics, there may be thousands of them. There'll not be thousands here. By the standards of earth, the gatherings of the Lord's people are very small. But I tell you, their value is not proportionate to their size. Even a handful of saints, they're just like gems and treasures in the eye of God because they have cost him the precious blood of his Son. It was a small building, but it was exceedingly wealthy. Now, around the temple, I'm just going to take a look around there. It was built of stone, possibly limestone, maybe some marble as well. It was built of stone, and then around the two sides of the temple, there was a porch at the front of it. You older people know all this 40 years ago, but some of the younger folks don't, and if you just bear with me for a minute, we'll teach them, and you do your best not to go to sleep. A porch at the front of it. And then down the two sides, there was a kind of a lean-to. And maybe along the back, a lean-to as well. You say, what was it for? Well, that's what we would call in our ordinary language the storerooms of the temple. Now, around those storerooms, there was a lot of activity went on. I think it was in there that they baked the bread for the tables. They didn't bake the bread in the temple. They baked it in the storeroom. I think if you had gone into that, some of those storerooms, there were three levels of them. I can't go into that here. We'll take a week on it in the will of the Lord somewhere else sometime, at some stage or other. If you had gone into some of those storerooms, there would have been another man with a wee bowl, and he would have been mixing up the incense. One man baking bread, another man. If you had gone into maybe another part of that storeroom, you would have found a man, and he would have been pressing away at the oil, or beating away at the oil. You say, what are you doing? You say, this is for the lamp. This is for the lamp. He said, the other man's making bread and the other man's making perfume for the incense, but he says, we have to keep this supplied. And then, when it came to the end of the week or whatever time they were changing over, this man came out and he brought the fresh bread and he put it on the table. And another man had the oil for the lamps. And another man had the perfume. And everything inside the temple just went on beautifully. There was food and there was light. And there was fragrance because there had been men working behind the scenes in the storeroom. Those storerooms were places of secret but busy activity. You know, when I come to an assembly, especially on a Lord's Day morning, I always know how the boys have been getting on in the storeroom. And you get a big 10-minute pause. And you say, where was the man last night making up the incense? There's no fragrance. Then there's another big pause when somebody should open the Bible. You say, where's the man last night should have been in the storeroom baking bread? And there's no bread. And the thing's very bare. And the thing's very vacant. And the thing's very embarrassing. Now these men used the storeroom for secret preparation. And when they went into the temple, what they had prepared secretly was put on display. That's what this is about. That's what this is about. We should be doing the secret preparation in the sanctuary storerooms at home. Preparation there. And when it comes to here, it's a matter of spiritual presentation. You know exactly what I'm saying. Now, I'll have to hurry on from that, for I don't want to say anything. Those are very interesting storerooms, and all the different things that are said about them, the material that they were made of, the staircase that went up, and how you climb from one degree into another. All those things you'll have to investigate for yourself. Now, when you get inside the temple, it must have been a very impressive thing to look at the splendour of this temple. Like, I think we have very little idea. You go and take a look at Yorkminster Abbey or some of these places, and they're certainly impressive enough buildings and so on, sticking out in a wrong dispensation. But anyhow, Solomon's temple was very, very impressive. The first thing you would expect to see when you would go into the temple inside, you would say, now, these lean-tos were on the outside. Once we get on the inside, we want to see about all these stones that they got. When you would get in there, you wouldn't see the sign of a stone. Not the sign of a stone. My, oh my. You say, what happened? The building was built of stone. But as soon as the stones were put up, the whole place, at least on the walls, there was a beautiful wainscoting of cedar, all covered. So that just, you know, well, I better not say a word because you never know. People nowadays are, a few years ago they took an awful thought at letting stonework be seen. Some people, you go into the house and you think you're looking at an outside wall. Just in a fireplace, it's all lovely. If you have that, don't say a word. I'll go back and I'll enjoy it. And if you have a good fire burning, it'll be great. But they wanted to see bare stone. There was nothing like that, just a crude bare stone. Not at all. Beautifully covered with cedar wood. You see, that would be very nice to look at. And the floor, even though the floor was stone, the floor was covered with fir or cypress.
And then there were a couple of doors made of olive wood. Solomon liked variety. You know, the house of God should always have variety. There's some people want all the time. But we should have variety. There should be variety in the people. There should be variety in the ministry. There were three types of wood in this. And it wasn't just the different types of wood for different things. The hardwood on the floor, the cedar wood on the ceiling, and the wainscoting, and the olive wood for the doors, and so on. It wasn't just three types of wood, but then the whole thing was plastered with gold. That shows you the wealth, you know. So when you walked into Solomon's temple, if you had been a priest, the people didn't get into it. But if you had gone into Solomon's temple, you'd have been walking on gold. I was in a part of the countryside recently, a part of the world recently, and every place you went into, you had to take your shoes off. And there's a special type of flooring. Well, you put slippers on, but then there's a special room that you get in, and even though you have the slippers on, it's a kind of a sacred room in every house, and there's a floor in it, the mat floor, called the tatami room, and you've even to take your slippers off. I think when you walked in Solomon's temple, you've been walking on your bare feet on a golden floor. Sacred. And gold at the sides. And gold above your head. And when the 10 lampstands would have been burning in that beautiful chamber, I tell you, that whole building would just have been like a blaze of light. I think that's what the assembly should be, you know. If the assembly was what God wants it to be, what just belongs to nature should never be seen. That's the stone. But we are just as the crude pieces, the crude chunks that were quarried out from nature's quarry, and we are brought into the building. I know they were shaped and so on. They were separated and then they were shaped. I can't go into that in this meeting. But they were put into the building, and what they were naturally was covered. You know, what I am by nature is expected to be shielded by the beauty of Christ. And I'm expected, as covered by the beauty of Christ, to radiate something of the glory of God. But you say, I wouldn't like that, all that gold just around me. Big sheets of gold. No, it wasn't just like that. There was beautiful decoration as well, you know. There wasn't only wealth, but there was decoration. That cedar wainscoting, like, it wasn't beauty board. It wasn't 3 millimeters thick or something like that. It was thick planks of cedar. And it was beautifully carved. I would love to have seen it. I'd like to get talking to some of these boys that did it when I see them. Beautifully carved. They had carvings of cherubim. And then when they carved out the cherubim and the cedar, they hammered the gold nicely into it, so that you could still see the cherubim through the gold. And then they had carvings of palm trees. And then they had carvings of flowers. It says open flowers. I'll explain that in a minute. Flowers. And when you'd have been walking into the temple, if you could have got into this golden temple and you started to look round about you, you know what you'd have said? You said, I'm back here in the garden. There's flowers and there are trees. And then you'd have taken a second look at it and you say, but gardens have flowers and trees, but not all gardens have cherubim. But there was one garden that did have cherubim. It was the Garden of Eden. And you would take a look around and you say, flowers and trees and cherubim. You say, I'm not only in a golden garden, but you say, I'm nearly back into the Garden of Eden. I tell you, brethren and sisters, if we were half what God wanted it to be, every assembly would just be like a garden before the fall. We'd be turning the clock back right to things before the fall and exhibiting something of the beauty and the glory of God. The cherubim were a symbol of divine government. Something beautiful about a palm tree. And the flowers. The Bible that I'm reading from here, Authorized Version, says, open flowers. Mr. Darby has a lovely rendering here that gets the point exactly, I think. He says, half open flowers. And the impression that was expected to be given was that these flowers are just in the process of opening. And if the cherubim told me about divine government, and the palm tree told me about divine grace, the half-open flower that was just about to blossom, that told me of divine growth. And if you have any idea, I think that that's what I should see and put it down. I shouldn't be here a day. A day. And I'm not here, haven't been here a day in that full sense. I shouldn't be here a week. I say a week. And I shouldn't be here amongst the saints for a week until I'm absolutely convinced. I would say, you know, that people that meet in Hanover Street, there's divine government there. Because they don't do what they like. No. And that people that meet in Hanover Street, there's divine grace there, there's palm trees, there's beauty, and there's protection there, divine grace. And those people that meet in Hanover Street, there's divine growth there. And the place when they come together is just like a garden, where everything's beautiful and fresh and progressing. God wanted Solomon to build a temple that would be really for his glory. One of the things, there was one side to the temple, that was the inside. I can't say anything more about that. It begs for a whole lot of elaboration, and we could go on, I think you would know, for a good while. But I want to look at the outside now. Inside, everything was gold. Outside, everything was brass. You see, gold would have been too soft to put outside. Solomon wasn't dealing in 9-carat gold. You people with your nice rings and so on, if you're interested in that line of business, you know, you'll want 18-carat gold, for you won't want it too soft. If it gets to 24-carat, it'll not wear. Solomon was using pure gold, and if he had brought pure gold outside, it wouldn't have worn. So the Bible tells us that he used highly polished brass or copper. It was like the gold, but it was strong. And one of the things that would have impressed you when you came outside the temple and looked into the court, just that courtyard that was around it, was the great big basins. Now, there was one great big basin there, and it held about 10,000 gallons. 10,000 gallons. An enormous amount of water. And there were 10 others, and each one of them held something like over 200 gallons. So you have 10,000 gallons in a big, it's called a sea actually, just like a symbol of the ocean. I can't go into that now, because that's the symbol. Inside it was a garden, outside it was like an ocean. It was the Lord of heaven and earth and sea. I can't go into all the symbolism of the temple just in these meetings and the compression of tonight. But there was a big thing called a sea, and then these 10 others, making a total of something like about 14,000 gallons of water. You say, bam, bam. What's all the water for? You know what God wanted to tell them? I want my house to be a clean place. No dirt about here. Everybody needs to wash here. Everybody needs to be clean. There's not only going to be beauty on the inside, but there'll have to be purity on the outside. And I can't stay to apply it any further. You get the application just here tonight. You know, one thing that God wants in the assembly is absolute purity. And this great structure was made just according to the specifications, and the climax was all reached in that day when every nail was put in place, and Solomon with it, and the divine resident came to live in the temple. It would have been an awful disappointment if God hadn't come to the temple. The glory of the Lord came down, filled the temple. The priests couldn't even move, couldn't even do their ordinary service. I think Solomon was a very happy man that day. He felt that all the expense has been well worthwhile. All the worry, all the work, all the toil, all the energy, all the time, he said, it has been well worthwhile. For he said, we have done something. And he said, the Lord is so pleased with us that he has granted us the luxury of his presence. I know that you Christians are like that. You know what it is to be at a meeting, and the thing's a bit cold, you know, and there's not much happening. But then you know what it is to be at another meeting when you get the joy of the Lord's presence. And if the Lord's presence is known in the assembly, I don't need to tell you that the Christians never think about the trouble. And the Christians never think about the temperature of the hall. And they never worry about where they're sitting. And all these small little things that so bother us, and things that we complain about, and things that we talk about, and things that we fight about, those things would be absolutely insignificant if we just had the liberality and the largeness of the Lord's presence. He brought everybody together for a week. And you know, it was that good the people all stayed for 2 weeks. They got to the end of the first week and they said, "This is so marvelous, sir. We have worked for this for 7 years and it's so marvelous." They said, "We'll stay for 2 weeks." You say, "Well, I guarantee you they went home brave and miserable after a fortnight of it." You know what it says? It says they went home every man with gladness in his heart. We are living in a day where everybody wants a minimum. You people all want 3 weeks in your holidays, and if a fellow preaches to 9:10 and you may get ready for it. He nearly grouse at him going out through the door. Reducing everything. Cut the meetings down. Keep them as short. Keep them as prompt. Oh, don't be too long. Don't impose upon. We have so many things to do, but I will wait 3 weeks in the sun. You see, I tell you, brethren, we have lost the touch of God's presence. And our priorities are all together wrong. If some of you are working to make money, you would work till the clock would strike 12. And if I said this meeting was going to go on to 12, and I'd be happy to keep it going to 12, I would have to close my eyes just. Anyway, they stayed for 2 weeks, and they weren't a bit disappointed, because the presence of the Lord was there. But if the thing's going to be extended, it's only the presence of the Lord that will really keep the Lord's people. So we finished that. That was a big house. Then beside it, and closely connected with it, he built these other buildings. Now I'll talk a little bit about them, and then we'll try and go home, because I can't go back on this. This subject is so big that it's nearly impossible to cover it. I've only scratched the surface of it, but I wanted to give you some idea of the absolute splendor of Solomon's temple. Then he built this great, the Ministry of Defense, the headquarters for it. It was called the House of the Forest of Lebanon. Now, some people have thought that Solomon had a house away up in Lebanon where he went for the winter, or summer maybe. He wouldn't go there in the winter, skiing or something. No, it wasn't away up in Lebanon. It was a house that was built in Jerusalem right beside the temple as the headquarters of the Ministry of Defense, and it was called the House of the Forest of Lebanon because it was completely built of cedars of Lebanon. It had 3 stories in it. Now, you remember, just tuck it into the back of your mind. Remember I said the lean-to at the temple had 3 stories. Well, here Solomon has built the headquarters for his defense munitions, and it's 3 stories. And it says there were lights opposite, there were windows down each side. And the window on one side exactly matched the window on the other side, and the light shone through. It was built in great big pillars. That'll be enough for that one. I would love to talk more about that, but I'm not. Then there was this porch, a long colonnade, and that went to the courts of justice. And it says that at the courts of, if you'd have been going into the courts of justice with Solomon, you'd have been walking through a great big corridor of pillars. You'd have looked at those people and say, "Well, there's one thing sure. I'm coming in here to a place and it's brave and straight. And a strong pillars of justice, the courts of justice, and then the palace behind it." And it was all very, very closely connected with the temple. Now, just to apply that for a minute or two, you know, some people have an idea that life is split up into different compartments. And they say, "Now I've got assembly life, and then I've got my private life, and then I've got my business life." And they say the assembly life, that's God's business, and the family life is the family's business, and my own business is my business, And the whole thing's just divided into different parts. Now, as far as Solomon was concerned, all three were closely linked together. I want to say at the end of this meeting today, what I am in the assembly, I should also be in my business. And what I am in my business, I should also be in my home. You know, there are men, and if you did something in the assembly half an inch from the Bible, it would come down on you like a ton of bricks. And if you met them in their business, they would rob you to your face. There are men as straight as a die in here, and men as crooked as a corkscrew out in the street. There are men praying like angels in the meeting, and they growl at their wife like a demon at home. What I am at home is linked to what I am in the house. I hope there's no man here two-faced. I hope there's no woman here living a double life. I hope there's no man here crooked in his business, hiding money under the bed. You know, all the departments. I haven't time to talk about it, but this house of the pillars was modeled on the temple. And this court of justice was modeled on the temple. And the features of the temple provided the very pattern that Solomon followed in these other departments of his life. And the standards for the temple became the shape and the standard for these other things. And I believe, dear brethren and sisters, as we almost draw to a close, the standards of the assembly should be the standard for everything. The holiness here should be carried the whole way through. There was a beautiful consistency. Solomon had them all linked just by a colonnade right through these three things, and I can't talk anything more about it really because of the time. Then round the whole thing he put a wall. It was no use having great buildings and no use having these wonderful edifices if they weren't well protected. I trust the Lord will give us an exercise not only to build for God. We're all builders, you know. We're all building. We're all in the work of construction. We're constructing a life that will be well tested. I'll just conclude now by praying, but I say, what are you building in the assembly? What kind of building are you doing in your work? What kind of building are you doing at home? Because we cannot put our lives into compartments, for they all hang together. They had a pearl. It was a problem. It was nice, you know. It was very nice to see that the king's living quarters was so near to the temple. It's good to find a man that keeps the two closely linked, but it had a problem later on that I would want to mention. Some of the bad things that came into the temple, the history that we are not going into just now, some of the bad things that came into the temple, they first of all came in through the king's house. They didn't bring them in through the front door of the temple, but they brought them into the king's house, and then they slipped them up through this corridor and in through the back door. And God was very grieved about it. We need to be very careful, brothers and sisters, how we live in our home, because many of the evils that can defile the Lord's people, they begin at home. What we start with privately will very quickly affect what we are publicly. And God expects our construction work in this life to be consistent. It was like that with Solomon. His architecture, I trust the Lord will bless these meditations as far as we've been able to take them tonight, shall we pray.